This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, today I'm so excited because we have it's sort of a real estate roundtable today with...
I would title this one The Slowdown.
The Slowdown. Oh, maybe. Well, we'll see what happens.
No.
We haven't titled it yet.
Right. But it is. It's kind of like, hey, what's going to happen over the course of the rest of the year? Different opinions. And
we brought in some great guys today. So this is, we've got Steve Saretsky. He is the author of The Saretsky Report. He is a podcast host, co-host.
The Looney Hour.
The Looney Hour podcast. Really, really great. Kind of filling a void on macroeconomics for the country.
It's funny when somebody does something and you go, wow, I didn't realize that gaping hole that these guys are filling.
Yeah.
And that's the Looney Hour to me.
It's great. And of course, he's a friend of ours, friend of the show. And then Michael Yu is the co-founder, partner at Oakland Realty, who again has been on the show before.
And, I'm really excited to have him back. And has the Oakland podcast as well, which is great stuff, especially for real estate agents. But I think there's a lot of kind of small business, I think, takeaways from that podcast that you could apply in any business situation. So it's great to have both these guys on the show. And the funny thing was, and I'll just say, interestingly enough, thinking back to this conversation, the nice part about having Steve and Michael is I feel like both these guys are knee deep in Vancouver real estate,
right?
Years and years of experience in the trenches, and yet both have kind of macro level perspectives, and they're
super
different,
bright guys,
different perspectives on the market, which is really interesting. So it was great having them down. And the funny thing was we had them down the Kokomo Studios. Steve didn't even know we had a podcast.
Those are the best podcasts when you put someone in the seat and you say, we're recording a podcast and they think we're just going for a beer.
He literally thought on Friday afternoon, he's like, all right, where are we meeting? Oh, we're going to walk somewhere from your office.
Yeah.
And it's like, no.
We don't do the meeting to plan for another meeting. We do the podcast.
Exactly. We have to have a big takeaway. And so it was good. And man, if that's him on the spot, imagine if he was prepared.
Yeah, exactly. No, super bright guys, both highly analytical. And today's episode, we kind of cover everything. We cover how the market is right this second in this moment, what's kind of been shaping the market and what will continue to shape the market. Will prices go up? When are the opportunities going to happen? And, where are the opportunities?
Hey, of course. Yeah. So most resilient markets, areas that are going to get crushed. It's all there this week.
This is a fantastic conversation. But before we get to that conversation, Matt, one thing we should mention, and we've mentioned it before, but the Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast, if you haven't been checking that out, definitely go and check it out. We've had so many people reach out who are pivoting from residential to commercial real estate investing.
It seems like, I don't know if there's if it's just where our kind of position in relation to the commercial podcast, or if there's something in the zeitgeist right now. It feels like a lot of people are getting more and more interested in commercial real estate.
Absolutely. And I mean, the other thing that we should talk about is, when you think about your real estate investing journey, someone said this to me the other day, it seems like a natural progression to go from residential to commercial.
Right.
Which is not the case for everybody. And I mean, it's part of diversifying your portfolio is, I think, being in a variety of different asset classes. But that's one thing that's come out of doing this show is it's exciting watching people that were residential real estate investors moving into the commercial space and just hearing about their experiences.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, it's been a real pleasure being involved in the Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast.
Absolutely. Sure. Absolutely. So Matt, without further ado, we run a little bit long today, but it is worth it. It is a fantastic show with a ton of takeaways. Michael Yu and Steve Saretsky.
Enjoy.
This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that's been around for nearly four decades. Marcon is not only committed to high-quality construction, but it also is making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland.
We want to highlight two incredible Marcon projects. Elmwood, a 38-story tower located at Burquitlam's most important intersection, Como Lake Avenue and Clark Road. This landmark tower will feature 335 condominiums, over 37,000 square feet of office and retail space, and almost 20,000 square feet of amenity space. Elmwood has been incredibly popular with 80% sold currently, but they still have a great selection of junior one-bedroom all the way to three-bedroom homes remaining. Check out marcon.ca/elmwood for more.
And Matt, we are also excited about Soane House, Marcon's newest community in West Coquitlam, with 165 homes ranging from junior one beds to three beds. Soane House offers the perfect West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced Nordic-inspired design. Register today at marcon.ca/soanehouse. That's S-O-E-N-H-A-U-S. Or you can learn more at marcon.ca or follow them at Instagram at Marcon Homes.
Marcon, building for life.
Okay, so we're here with Michael Yu, partner at Oakland Realty, and Steve Suretsky. He's the author of the Suretsky Report. Did I get that correct?
He's a housing analyst?
Housing analyst.
Oh, wow.
and co-host of the Looney Hour podcast.
He also sells real estate,
and we should say. Coffee connoisseur, washed up hockey player.
Broken down hockey player.
Awesome. Well, thanks for taking the time today, guys, and thanks for coming down to the studio. Michael, you've been on the program before, but can you remind listeners, tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Well, I'm one of the partners at Oakland Realty in Vancouver. Been in real estate for 16 plus years. And it's been fun. Actually, after the last podcast, a few people texted me. I felt like a celebrity. So.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I should say, I haven't seen you in a while. And yeah. You're a bit of a Henry Golding these days. Your face, you look like you've been, fasting?
Yeah, I started doing that intermittent fasting thing. It's all the rage now. So I'm starving myself. So this, fantastic. This beer will
you
be
look
good.
Great. That's your first meal of the day.
Exactly. A barley meal. That's right. Yeah.
And Steve, tell us a little bit about yourself.
And specifically, just before anything else, I know you played hockey, but can we get a little bit of details?
Matt's specifically interested in your hockey.
Yeah. Not well. No, I played... like junior hockey as a kid, I guess. Junior B, so Richmond Sockeyes, and then ended up going to the BCHL. And then in my 20-year-old, I'm most popularly known for being the suitcase of the league, a.k.a. I played for five teams that year. So pretty much traveled all around Canada, just nobody wanted me. So that's
what
how
position?
And then I ended up at Oakland. Nobody wanted me. And yeah.
But what the realty of broken dolls.
So that was in the BCHL?
Yeah, BCHL. Cowichan Valley, Alberni Valley, and then, I mean, I won't continue. I won't make the list much longer than that.
That's were you what? You were a forward?
Forward, yeah.
Yeah.
And was goal that, scorer? how rough of a league? Sorry, we got many questions about this. Was it rough?
Not really. I don't think it's that rough.
Because you're a bit younger than us. I feel like Junior B used to be like crazy.
I think hockey's just getting like softer in general. Like every year, like there's less fighting. And so I feel like when I was in it, there was definitely like we were the toughest team, but it wasn't me fighting, that's for sure.
When Matt played, he was a goalie and he didn't wear a helmet. So that was
different. Right?
That explains a lot.
maybe to continue, sorry, I cut you off at your 22-year-old self. Since then, you ended up at Oakland. A little bit more about yourself, Steve?
Yeah, I bounced around brokerages as well. So Mike finally, I don't know what Mike was thinking, but brought me on to Oakland. So yeah, here, this is year 8 in real estate. So I guess half of Mike's wisdom. And
half as smart as me.
Yeah. Just having fun with it on the content production side, similar to what you guys are doing. And
right.
Just loving real estate. There's always things to talk about. And that's why we're here, I guess.
Perfect. Okay. So, you know, we wanted to have both of you on for a long time, but I think now is like a really opportune moment because there's a shift going on in the market.
Right.
Maybe I'll leave it open. How's the market?
Well, yeah, it has slowed down. I think we've been last 2.5 years or so, we've just been on this like rocket ship, and it just felt like there was no end in sight. And I think like it's starting to, I guess, you know, the lights in the bedroom are turning on. obviously, with the interest rates rising, and you know, things are starting to slow down, and so it's an exciting time. It's a transitionary time. People aren't really sure exactly what's going to happen. I think we all probably have our crystal ball predictions, but Steve, what do you think?
I mean, I'll preface this. I think it's, as much as I might be pessimistic, I think it's a time of opportunity coming up as well. Mm-hmm. That I think that we're going through a clear transition. I think, like as Mike said, it's been a 2-year back-to-back years of record home sales. Nothing goes up in a straight line. And I think that policymakers are pretty clear in telling us what they are intending to do with financial markets. And so, yeah, interest rates up. I think activity is slowing. I mean, I can speak for my own personal business. Like, it's slowing. I've got all of a sudden a lot more time to come here and have a beer and do a podcast. So, you know, if you guys asked me to do this 6-8 months ago, I wouldn't have the time. Everyone was run off their feet. So I think it's changing, and I think it's going to be an interesting change.
Yeah, Matt and I still had the time.
Yeah, we were here. And it speaks to Michael's business that you had the time, but right. You're very good at systems.
That's what I found out about you. Maybe it's an element of laziness, but I'm really big on building programs and systems, and you know, trying to kind of create an ecosystem around yourself to be able to build a business. But you know, I think when we talk about the market specifically and what's going to kind of happen, I think it's so interesting right now. You know, I think there's a lot of lessons from history, you know, with rising interest rates and kind of how the market reacts. And so like a lot of people that I've talked to that had experience in the, you know, in the 90s with rising interest rates and even the 80s in interest rates, they're telling us of what could potentially happen. What do you guys think about that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think the biggest thing is just rates and the cost of money, right? Like every time, you guys probably get all the time too, like the media calls, they reach out, everybody wants to know foreign buyer tax, empty homes tax, new housing supply. And I just think like, really, I think at the end of the day, the only thing, well, not the only thing, but the thing that really moves the market is like the cost of money. Like if you drop mortgage rates to 1.5%, like, yeah, prices ripped to all time highs and now they're going up to 4%. Like it's not surprising to see prices are starting to come off. Like, mm-hmm.
So along those lines, where are you guys seeing, I know we all primarily, well, actually, Steve, I think you're kind of more broader in terms of your scope of where you operate. I think we work primarily in Vancouver. Like, are you guys seeing, is it across the board slowing, or where are you seeing the market kind of dropping off precipitously as compared to other areas?
I'm kind of seeing it generally across the board. There's some kind of really high demand type of properties. Like, you know, just anecdotally, like, you know, there's some like East Van Detached, for example, still feels like it's pretty hot, but like there's still some, you know, there, I think across the board that there has been a shift in activity. Certainly I haven't really seen an enormous price shift. You know, I'm kind of surprised that prices haven't changed as much as they were. But yeah, so I have seen that activity really, yeah, change.
I'd love to get your guys' opinion about this, but we were talking yesterday. It actually came off a conversation with a client who was saying, okay, well, now's the time to go out shopping, right? And Steve just mentioned, you know, there's going to be some opportunities coming, but it is very weird how there's a lag period for price discovery. Right. That often takes place in markets like this. And there's often a standoff between buyers and sellers. And then eventually someone has to sell and it kind of resets a building or it resets an immediate area. I'd love to hear your guys' take on when you think opportunities will start presenting themselves.
I tend to think like 6 to 12 months is kind of like what I'm thinking personally. I think it takes time, right? Like, I don't know. I mean, I don't think we're setting up like US, and you know, people like to say, oh, the US housing crisis is this 2.0, right? I mean, but you know, US houses peaked in 2006 and they bottomed in 2012, like it was like 6 years down. I think, yeah, I look back here, the last correction we had in Vancouver was what, 2017, 18-ish?
Mm-hmm.
It took a while for prices, like, you know, you saw some of the detached market peak in 2016, like Richmond, West Vancouver, West Side Vancouver. And then like the best deals were probably in like 2018. So it was like 2 years later that I felt like the best pricing. But again, it's always hard to predict, right? I mean, 8 months from now, we could be talking about lowering interest rates that are once again beginning to fall, and maybe you already missed the opportunity. So it's always hard to say, but I think like similar to what Mike just talked about, or you just talked about, is that it takes time. No seller just says, I'm going to cut my price $100,000 because it didn't move in the first 5 days.
Right.
Like it takes time. People, no one's just going to fire sale the house. This is not tech stock.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, there was a media article that was posted, and the headline was like, Toronto area home prices dropped 22% in like a month. And I was like, well, this is just wrong. Like if you guys look at what they're portraying, is they're saying, oh, the average sales price, you know, in March was whatever, 1.8, and today it's 1.5. And you're like, it's an average sales price. No, housing doesn't move 20% in a month. Again, this isn't a tech stock. Like this is for the most part, can be an illiquid asset in a down market. There's emotions involved. It's a long sales cycle. So I was just trying to emphasize that to people, like people that are expecting like, oh, I'm going to wait this year and I'm going to buy a house in December of 2022 and I'm going to get 30% off. Like, it's not how it works. Like,
right.
You might get 5%, 7%, 8% in December, it's slow moving. It's very quick on the way up.
Yeah.
And I think housing tends to be very sticky on the way down.
So I want to go back to interest rates, because it seems like at least on one side of the table here, Steve and Michael's side, interest rates is kind of the live and die by interest rates, right? So do we have predictions? How high do they go? What does that mean for carrying costs for people in variable mortgages specifically? Are there fire sales? Does it get really kind of tricky in Vancouver? And, you know, you're saying what, 8 to 12 months, potentially 18 months? For this to kind of play out, where do interest, is it interest rates that come back down in order to, for this market to kind of rebound?
I think in the grand perspective of things, like, you know, the interest rate is still fairly low. The prime rate is still fairly low when we look at the last 30 years or 50 years. And, and I don't foresee like a incredible spike in those interest rate in the prime rates going from like, you know, they just raised it half a percentage point and people are starting to get nervous and freaking out. But I'm not seeing like the foreclosures or like anything, in the near future per se. But I still think interest rates are going to remain relatively low if we look at a 30-year average or 50-year average. And I can't foresee the Bank of Canada to raise them like, you know, to 6 or 7 or 8%, because that would just have a tremendously negative effect on the economy. So I think that there is a healthy balance. And I think we were probably ready for a little bit of a change because, you know, the last year and a half, I think I sympathize with a lot of people that couldn't get into the market. And, you know, and I think that there's programs and opportunities for them to be able to do so. So I think you got to embrace those changes and look at every market as a market that has opportunity. So like just for even for my own portfolio, I look to like at opportunities in every market. So yeah.
I was just gonna say that I think there's like pros and cons. So I think for the people that are listening being like, oh my god, how much are rates gonna go up? Did I take on too much debt? I think like the one silver lining is that this isn't like the 1980s. The amount of like private debt that Canada has accumulated since the 1980s suggests that it's not actually gonna take that much increase of interest rates to actually trigger, unfortunately, a lot of pain, right?
Like right.
We're not going to 18%.
Yeah, you can't go to 18% when you have like, you know, household debt to GDP at like 170%.
Right.
And like, you know, anyways, Canada has one of the worst debt metrics and so does the world, right? It's not just like Canadian households, it's like sovereign governments.
Right.
So there's not really actually a real ability to actually like normalize and raise interest rates like everyone talks about in the 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I guess, the positive. Now, the thing is, I think they'll try to raise interest rates as much as they have, and that will inflict some pain. That's why we talked about opportunities in the market. So I'll probably be the first to say I was initially wrong. So I'm not really always the best at predicting markets. Right. I was wrong. I didn't think mortgage rates would get to 4.2 what they're at today for fixed rate, 4.3, whatever. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, but it seems like they could easily get to 5% this year. But I think that ultimately, I don't think the market can actually withstand 5% rates. I think we're seeing activity slow down.
Mm-hmm.
I always go back and say, well, what happened last time rates were this high? It was 2018. That was the down market, the opportunity market, where mortgage rates got to like 3.6, 3.7. Everybody thought they were going to 4. Let's just wait. Mm-hmm. And housing activity in Greater Vancouver fell to an 18-year low. So I don't know. I'm like I said, I think we're looking at the people that are still buying today. A lot of them are still on like these rate holds that were,
right.
Oh, I've got my rate held here at 3%. Like I better buy today because if I wait 6 more weeks that expires and now at 4%.
Mm-hmm.
So
you think that there's that tailwind that's kind of keeping the market going right now.
Yeah, and that's why we talked about like opportunities in the short term, like 6 to 12 months, because like if you think about the people that are actually still transacting in the market today, most of them are still on like pre-existing rate holds and not necessarily
a good point.
Falling under. So most of those rate holds seems like they'll expire.
Guys think of the relationship between like the interest rates and the inflation rate? Because like if you think about the, like if inflation rates at like, this is just like my, if the value of the dollar, and this is probably what Steve talks about all the time, but if the value of the dollar, I think I saw that the inflation rate was like 6.something% year on year or something like that. And you know, if you're borrowing at 4%, like you're kind of,
You're making 2% on your debt.
So I came in here yesterday in tears, worried about my variable rate at 2.5.
Right.
And somebody made that point to me.
Yeah.
God, snap out of it. Slapped me in the face. And,
right.
Woke me up. But yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah. So I still feel like, you know, that's something to take into account, the relationship between inflation and, you know, your debt servicing, and kind of like looking at that as a marker as well. What do you think about that, Steve?
I mean, that was like my whole thing. Like, it was like, how would you not be bullish on real estate during, like, especially over the last, let's say, 18 months? It was like mortgage rates, you could fix them at one point at like 1.5%. And it was like inflation was like, at the time, was only like 4. But you're like, well, that's still a pretty good deal. Everybody knew it was higher than 4, too. It's kind of like BS metrics. Right. But like, you can fix your debt for 1.5%. Like, it was insane.
Yeah.
It was like the opportunity.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, prices obviously in some markets basically doubled in 3 years.
Right.
It's like the easiest trade of our lives. And, you know, you had our own, like, Bank of Canada governor coming out and telling everybody at the onset of the pandemic, we're going to keep rates at 0 until, like, the end of 2023. He basically gave everybody, like, a green light.
Let her rip.
And then he comes out, just like, 6 months later. He's like, oh, don't worry about housing. It's just transitory. It's a little bit of pent-up demand. You're so I don't know. And like I said, now the conversation is shifting, which is like, hey, we're going to create their words, not mine, is like reverse wealth effect, which is like, we're going to try to, like, drop asset prices and to try to curtail inflation, because they're like, well, if we can't fix supply chain, so let's try to like put a knife into people's sort of wealth that has been created over the past couple of years and see if that, because you can imagine, like, if you've got, you know, a house that was worth $1 million and then it increased in value to like 1.5, you're like, I've got $500,000 of new equity that I can, like, you can tap. Like at any moment,
if you want to buy. And even if you don't tap, psychologically, it does.
Yeah.
You're tapping it, right? It's, you're wealthier than you think.
So I think that's what they're worried about.
Start treating your friends a bit worse.
Yeah. I think they're like, this could get out of control, right? So, like, imagine if, like, all these people just, like, new wealth just starts to, like, tap into it and go on vacations and boats and all this stuff. So, like, we better, like, change them psychologically. And so I think, like, that's pretty much what they've told you they're going to do during this rate hiking cycle. Now, again, whether how far they get is anyone's guess. I don't think they're going to get as far as everybody anticipates. But
so, and just thinking about this, how far, so with that stated goal, what do we see in the Vancouver market? And then maybe, I know you follow the Canadian market, but what are we seeing in terms of depreciation here? Because one thing that strikes me is we talk about the 80s, and the 80s is, you know, never forget, you know, every boomer will tell you my first mortgage was 18% or whatever. I've also had people tell me my house wasn't worth what I paid for it for, you know, 6, 8, 10 years, whatever it was. It was like this really long time. And one thing that strikes me about this conversation so far is we're like, get in for a rocky time, guys. It's going to be like 6, maybe 12 months. Like, it's a pretty quick turnaround here. So I'm curious to hear what you think housing does, Michael, in the next 12 months and thoughts on kind of how quickly these cycles are turning now.
Right. Well, I think, you know, I think activity will, you know, continue to kind of fall as the, you know, these pre-approvals get absorbed and stuff like that, and people get used to things, and that discrepancy between like a seller's expectation and a buyer's like kind of ceiling price gets, there's going to be a bit of a gap or a canyon there. My advice to sellers is obviously, you know, to be prepared to hold the property, you know, just in case, you know, and I think it's all about holding power for a seller. You know, if you're not rushed to sell and you don't, you know, you're not accomplishing a goal or doing something, you know, with the proceeds that's going to be, it's going to be advantageous for your future, you know, just really, you know, really prepare yourself to be able to hold the property if need be. And for a seller or for a buyer, I think there's opportunities in every market. And as long as when you buy a property, you're prepared to hold it for the long term, you know, it's going to be impossible to time kind of the bottom shallow of a market and as it peaks up. So, you know, it just has to be the right opportunity, either, you know, from yourself for you to live in and your creature comfort and all the rest of it. Because I still think buying property is certainly better than renting, especially rental rates have kind of really started.
And they're going up.
They're going up.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, rental rates are, even for older walk-up apartment blocks and even, you know, condos and houses, all the rental rates are going up. So I can't really, I still believe that buying property is more advantageous than renting. So, you know, I think that's something to kind of take into account too. So, you know, if you can afford to get into the market, now might be a good time.
Yeah, I think that it always depends on like the client situation too, right? Because it's like, if you are, I got a bunch of clients and like that are right now that are like, okay, I've got a condo, I want to buy a detached house. It's like, you're trading one for one. Like, those still transactions, like, you can kind of try to get cute and like time them. But again, like, does anyone really have the ability to like perfectly execute that, especially consistently?
Especially if you're moving through the market, like, yeah. At least a lot of the people I work with, you know, somebody said, what do you think about renting? Well, you got a 3-year-old. So, you know, you might want to, that could be one strategy that might work out in your favor, but do you really want to move into a rental for 6 months and then move again? And he's like, no, absolutely not. Like, that's right.
I think I 100% agree. I think it depends on like who the client is. Cause I feel like I got this one client, I love him to death, but he's like, I mean, he successfully timed, I think, the top of the market twice.
Okay.
He'll literally just like buy a primary residence. It rips, like, not mm-hmm. to his like expectation, but it rips. And he's like, can make $500,000 in like a year and a half tax free. I'm taking it. I'm going to go rent. Mm-hmm. And then he rents and then the market drips and he's successfully done that.
Right.
But I was like,
is this a single guy?
No, he's got like, now he's got like a family and kids. And I was like, right. I couldn't do that. Most people shouldn't do that
mm-hmm.
because like, we've also seen like, and there's a lot of realtors that I had a ton of respect for that are brilliantly smart. And even if you ask me during the onset of the pandemic, like in like March, April, May last year or 2020, I would have been like, yeah, you should sell. Like, market's probably going to drop record unemployment.
I remember I just walked around collapsing deals all over the place in March 2020.
Right. Yeah, so like some really smart realtors that I have a lot of respect for that like thought they could outsmart the market. They had a competitive advantage knowing probably more than most people do, decided to sell and rent. And like their house went up, you know, 50%
right.
over 18 months.
Yeah, it's goes the other way too.
So right? It was like, again, if you have the bank account and the wealth to like rebuy back in at potentially much higher prices, if your bet goes wrong, then great, go take a gamble. But I think for most people, the answer is no.
Yeah. Like, even like just anecdotally, when I bought my first property, it was in 2007, like right at the top of like the market. And then there was that tech bubble burst. And then I remember I bought my condo in Richmond for $235,000. And I was like, yes, like I made it in life. And I thought that, you know, that was really the top of the market at that time for a condo in Richmond. And I was just like, and then 2008 hit and then the you know, kind of the tech bubble happened. And there was like, we went to really low activities. This is in 2008. And I was just like, yeah, I almost was like kicking myself. And I went through the emotional roller coaster myself. But then, you know, a really wise, you know, investor told me, as long as you can hold the property, you know, you're going to be okay. Yeah, and I held the property for over 10 years or so, and then I sold it, you know, in 2017 to upgrade to something better, and then there you go.
That's Andrei Pavlov was on a few weeks back.
Right.
And his comment was, you know, it's going to be tough to hold on for a lot of people, but the people that can hold on are going to do incredibly well.
Right.
Do you agree or disagree?
I mean, I think you're also tax advantaged to hold on.
Right.
Right. Like, yeah. Primary residence exemption, like, and even like, even if you sell an investment property, it's like capital gains. So it's right. Like, you're better off just like hold it, refinance it in 8 years and keep adding. I mean, I think that's what like the true like wealthy can mm-hmm. do. But like, again, it's just a matter of like, can you get through like the down markets? And I think he's probably right. Like there's going to be people that are maybe on a floating variable that, you know, are over levered that can hold on.
And cause I had I sat down with a really well-known real estate lawyer in town this week. And his comment was, you know, just from speaking to people, but there's going to be a lot of pain likely in the entry level of the market. Mm-hmm. But he said, you know, for people that are well established with equity, with, you know, fairly well big incomes, call it an extra $1,000 a month is not a big deal. Where do you see the pain points in the market?
I always like almost joke about this because it's like a 4% mortgage to someone that's buying like a $5 million house in the West Side. Like they don't even care.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know what? I was just involved in something around that price point and I was struck at how busy it was still. It was like, yeah, oh, right. You know, you go on a $600,000 condo and it's like, okay, this, you can feel the impact and it's, you know, some of the market's still really busy at that price point. But yeah, that higher price point is like, it's not a concern.
I think so. And then you go to like the suburbs and like let's call it like maybe like an entry level house for like 1.6, 1.7. Like those are like blue collar people, normal people that are like, hey, my mortgage rate went from 1.8 to 3.8. Like that matters. Like that $700 more per month with two kids that are going through daycare and all that. Like, I think that's where you see like the demand pull back. Cause like I said, I think for the wealthy, like that are buying with like huge down payments or no mortgage at all, like they don't care.
Yeah. So young people and families in the suburbs.
I think that's where the vulnerabilities, but also like the suburbs, what, doubled in 3.5 years?
This is, like, that's what I've been thinking about, right? Is like Vancouver, we've seen increases, but like nothing like Langley, Abbotsford,
Maple Ridge.
Maple Ridge is, went crazy.
Well, like a condo in downtown Vancouver is like still below like 2017 yeah, peak.
Yeah. Like if you're right at the start of 2018, I've seen somewhere you're like, oh yeah, you can't achieve that right now. Those prices. So
I wouldn't say there's a lot of froth there. So I'm not like, I wouldn't be worried too much about like valuation corrections in that market, but like the valuation correction, I'm like, ooh, you know, pre-sale Surrey condo for $1,200 a square foot. Like that's the price at Olympic Village, man. Like
yeah, sure.
That to me is like, I'm a little bit worried about the prices there.
Hey everyone, pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
We are also sponsored by Oakland Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That's oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the bigwigs over at Oakland, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakland.com/join, typing in VRP 2020.
Yeah, we've talked about Surrey presale on this show quite a bit. I think, yeah, and who knows? Who knows? But yeah, I would agree.
It does seem like in terms of like where the vulnerability lies, though, is so entry level probably across the board. And I'm thinking, and it sounds like you guys are probably in agreement, kind of people unfortunately moving through the market probably in the last year, 18 months out in the burbs where it was going bananas,
right,
where they're like, you know, hit that townhome for 850 or 900K and they're on a variable. That's where I think the pain, unfortunately, is going to be greatest.
Right. And, you know, I think we can, like for me, when I talk to my friends about this, I think we can really only have impact on what we can actually control. And we can't control what interest rates are going to do. We can't control what the market's going to do specifically, but we can control our, like, you know, spending habits. We can control our, you know, how we, our lifestyles, because, you know, in the last, like Steve was saying, it's been so liquid in the, you know, the stock market, like crypto and everything like that has just been on this like big roller coaster rocket ship. And then, you know, we're kind of coming back down to earth. And so if you're used to that kind of like, you know, big lifestyle, like really look at like what you can change and make the differences so you can hold your properties that didn't go towards another, like, I'm a big collector of handbags.
Every single time I talk to him, something, it doesn't surprise me, but I'm still like, I'm still new shocked. Information.
Are these men's hands?
Nobody knows.
Yeah. Well, there. No, I'm just kidding. Like, you know, I think you just got to shift the lifestyle a little bit. And, you know, I think.
Oh, wait, that was actually a joke. Oh, okay. Yeah. You know, I thought you were serious. And
I made the mistake of thinking magic the first time you told me about it was a joke, but it wasn't. No, so now I believe everything
I'm
you
a
say.
Big, I'm a big hobbyist. I'm a fantasy guy. So, but I think, like, you know, just looking at those things that you can control and really making sure that you don't overdo it on that perspective, because I've seen a lot of people get drowned in consumer debt and stuff like that. And, you know, trying to upkeep with a lifestyle, specifically a lot of realtors, you know, there's a lot of realtors
and just looks at me. For the people at home, he pointed at Steve.
Oh yeah.
It's that new plaid Tesla you just picked up.
Exactly.
What about in thinking about kind of the national context, you know, is every city going to go through it the same way? Or are we looking at Toronto and Vancouver, the most expensive markets being hit the hardest here?
That'd be a really good question. I mean, again, personal opinion, I always just think, like, I think Toronto and Vancouver are so highly levered. Like, I know everyone talks about, like, foreign buyers, and there's definitely a lot of, like, foreign investment in these markets, but like, there's still, like, a lot of, like, locals taking on a lot. Like, pretty common in Vancouver for, like, a younger family to have $1 million mortgage. I think that's pretty normal. Like, I mean, your average house is like 1.8, like, $1 million mortgage, pretty normal. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I think I just look at it and say $1 million, again, from a rate going from 2% to say 4%, that kind of starts to matter. When you go to, like, markets like, you know, Alberta, where, like, the average house is, say, 500,000 and you have a mortgage of 300, I just don't think there's as much leverage in. They actually have really high incomes, or, like, you know, Saskatoon, where it's like, okay, your mortgage is $150,000, and, like,
you can weather the storm.
I don't think there's that much vulnerability in parts of those more, like, affordable markets in Canada. I think, like, I get worried about, like, Vancouver, Toronto, there's a lot of leverage. There's maybe be a little bit more speculation because we've had it such a good market for the last 10 plus years. I don't know if you want to throw Montreal and Ottawa in there, but I just think there's a little bit more leverage, a little bit more speculation in those markets.
And I want to hear from you, Michael, but I just want to talk about Alberta, because Steve, you've been somewhat bullish on Alberta last time we talked. And it seems like another thing we talked about with Andrei Pavlov when he was on the show, but Alberta's kind of uniquely positioned potentially with oil and also, like, it's an affordable, beautiful province to live in. And they've had some really a strong uptick in their market. What are your thoughts on Alberta right now?
I mean, I think, like, I do stuff in Calgary. I just, like, I actually enjoy the city. Like, I'm always, like, if you're going to buy investment property out of, like, where you live, I think you have to enjoy, like, to go and check up on your property. So I always enjoyed going in Calgary. Highest household incomes in Canada, and their house prices are, you know, you can get a nice single family house in the city there for $600,000. So,
And you mentioned, Steve, before in one of, that the cap rates are quite big.
Yeah, you're like you're about a 5% cap rate, give or take, in that market. So, and it's a major metro city, right? I mean, it's like the third largest major metro in Canada, or fourth largest. So, yeah, I think it's got a lot going for it. Obviously, oil's picked up. So I think that, I'm not worried about that market, like, rates going up. I just think, prices again, maybe go flat, probably. But I don't really worry too much about a correction. I think the corrections will probably stem predominantly in, like, Vancouver suburbs. I think, you know, everybody's well documented, like, what's happening in Toronto suburbs, like Brampton, Ontario, or, like,
Guelph.
Yeah. Like, I don't know.
I feel like I know you're active on Twitter. I kind of scroll through Twitter and see all the realtors who post about Ontario.
And you guys are getting off now that Elon Musk is.
Right. I've already canceled. But it does seem like my sense is, and I could be off on this, my sense is maybe the realtors are just louder on Twitter, but it seems like Ontario's going through a kind of, the correction has started, it's fiercer. And it's like, even February, they're like, oh, like, we were going crazy here still. And they seem to be, you know, it seems like they're in a tough spot in a lot of places in Ontario.
It's brilliant. Like, I just think, yeah, I think there's a lot of like speculation in Ontario. I just like see some like the pre-sale prices.
Right.
And like, I thought we had a bad here, but I look over there, I'm like, man, you guys are nuts.
But also, like, friend of the show,
Andrew LaFleur.
He's been on our show. Well, he used to come on all the time. And we would talk, you know, pre-sales hitting $1,000 a foot here at that time. And he was like, oh, we're at 750, 800 a foot. And our market was it was more expensive, but it seemed kind of more established in like in the pre-sale world. It just seemed he was watching Vancouver in a way that I feel like has switched in a lot of ways. Like Toronto's kind of went on a crazy run, it seems like. But
I was talking to some really big brokers in Calgary. And so condos have been historically like a really bad investment in Calgary. There's just so much land. You just keep expanding out. Like,
right, yeah.
Again, if you can buy a single family house for like $500,000, like why would you buy a 2-bedroom condo for 400?
Sure.
Like, but basically what's happening is that pre-sale market's like reignited because all the Toronto condo brokers are flogging these to their investors.
Andrew LaFleur
is doing
stuff in Calgary now.
But here's the thing that I was actually going to bring up about Calgary. That's the hard part. I mean, and you said, if you like spending time there, we both lived in Calgary back in the 90s, which is totally different world than it is now, obviously. But we were looking at some condos there a couple of years back, and the rub for us was like, all right, do people actually want to? We're taking like the Vancouver mindset and applying it to Calgary. Like, of course, yeah, it's downtown condo. Like, this is going to rent easy. And it's like, no, you know, go to whatever one of those smaller towns that's now almost part of Calgary, whatever those are. Like, that's where people want to be there. And so it's like the logic, that's the challenge in that market specifically, because it feels like it's almost the exact opposite of
I remember Vancouver. When Matt spoke to the broker, he said, where's the Yale town of Calgary? I said, Calgary? That's
the Yale town of Calgary,
I'm not using a Vancouver lens here.
Where's your Cole Harbour?
We want to be Mount Pleasant of Calgary. Right. And there is a Mount Pleasant
Where's
of
the
Calgary.
Water? Yeah, exactly. Where's the ocean close by here?
But it is challenge. That's the one challenge,
right.
At least outside of, I feel like outside of BC, well, maybe just the prairies, it becomes very challenging.
Yeah, well, because you know, when you're in an area, your mindset can get siloed, right? And you're just staying in this kind of environment, in this kind of like high-paced environment. And so like, you know, you do need to have that mindset shift and like, you know, be intelligent. And, you know, one of the things that I learned from a great real estate investor, he always told me that when you buy a property, worst case scenario, you're going to have to live there at some point. You know, it's like if everything kind of hits the fan, it's kind of like that. There's that CBC show, Schitt's Creek or something.
Yeah.
They end up living there. And so like the worst case scenario is you need to live there. And like, I always have that in mind whenever I'm buying my own properties. And I, you know, just with my own investments, like I buy in every market and I look to hold for the long term, you know, and kind of go from there. That's kind of my philosophy. I don't really, if I don't need to sell, I try not to. I only sell when I want to upgrade to a better opportunity and really like looking at it pragmatically. And I think a lot to do, and I know I kind of shared this before, but I think it has a lot to do with lifestyle and stuff like that. You know, you can make some really great decisions and organize yourself and putting yourself into great assets like real estate and, you know, and having a reasonably good stock portfolio, that type of thing. So it's kind of being disciplined in that perspective, which a lot of people miss out on, right? So, and I think that, you know, there's like, I kind of imagine like me listening to this podcast when I was 18 years old or something like that. And that would be what I would want to take from it. Like, hey, like, you know, start kind of being disciplined with your spending habits and how you're earning and looking at your own finances as something as like really the golden ticket to be able to get into the real estate market or to get into any kind of, you know, kind of long-term wealth. Yeah.
Do you time markets or try and time markets?
No.
You know, it's funny. We've had so many successful real estate investors on this show over the years, and the best don't ever really care about timing the market. They just deploy.
I have a question for you. So would you look at this period, or maybe if you can go back in hindsight, in like 2006, 2007, would you look at it and say, oh, okay, you know, the Federal Reserve is starting to raise interest rates. Like, I'm assuming you would still try to like would you try to like position yourself like, I'm going to try to build a little bit more cash right now than I maybe normally would?
Right.
Because I feel like opportunities are on the horizon. If they don't manifest, then I just have a little bit more cash.
Yeah. Which, you know, that's a good thing. It has to be the right opportunity. Right. So obviously you want to like, but and you want to be prepared. So really being really smart about, you know, setting aside, like knowing what you're, I'm not a sophisticated business guy. So knowing what your burn rate is, knowing like, you know, what your monthly expenses are like, knowing, you know, what the costs of buying this real estate are going to be. And if you can withhold it through your career or through your business or through, you know, other means to be able to like go through a dark and stormy time. Now, that being said, like, you know, you can't predict a lot of things like, you know, without being too sob story, like, you know, my family in the 80s or early 90s, like when the interest rate spiked, they got caught. They had to sell everything. And so if something like that happened, I might get caught too. But, you know, so it's just being an element of luck, but also being really prepared and being disciplined from that perspective. So, yeah, just like when to deploy. I think basically if you follow a principle of, you know, putting your, you know, your revenues into certain buckets of like, okay, this is a mix of high risk, medium risk, and low risk investments, and really like looking at it just kind of at a 30,000 square foot lens up up top, and then just kind of, okay, this is, now it's ready. Okay, so I'm buying this,
right? You know,
that type of thing. So yeah, that's kind of like a philosophy that a lot of people, well, I think, take. Yeah,
and you're diversified. And friend of the show, Corey Wright, I was talking to him the other day, and he's doing consistently deals and has been for years, kind of personally,
right?
Or as joint ventures. But the benefit of being diversified and having some commercial as well,
right,
is like Corey's take on the market was like, who cares? There's an asset class in commercial where there's going to be an opportunity, and you know, there's going to be busy and soft spots all the time. So just keeping moving. So it's a little bit different residential, but like I said, I mean, you're varying your portfolio.
Yeah. So like, you know, you don't just fix on to, you know, I think obviously you do it step by step, but like you don't just fix onto one type of property. Like I've worked with Corey to, yeah, he's awesome actually, by the way. And yeah, to look at some commercial and retail properties, and yeah, just kind of diversify a little bit in that sense. And it's not only just real estate, you know, like Steve was talking to me, we were having beers at Colony the other day. He was talking to me a little bit about cryptocurrency. So I even thinking about starting to get into there too. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow. We haven't, we've never talked about crypto on the show other than saying we know nothing about it.
Yeah. But
my Ethereum hasn't performed very well since I bought it at the peak.
What I've learned about that is, am I like, you know, I think of it just as kind of like a buy and hold type of thing, not just like, and I'm a buy and hold guy, not like a, you know, trying to speculate market timing. And even like my stocks and stuff like that, they're like, I buy, I hold, and I never sell them. So like, and basically I just sit, and they just sit there, and I don't really know if they're going up or down. I get a call from the broker once a year, and they say,
I feel like you have to be
doing okay.
I feel like you have to be good at what you kind of know. Like you have to, I think as the investor, you have to kind of like self-assess like who you are.
Right. Yeah, like, exactly. That's interesting actually. Yeah.
Those are like, I literally will do every asset class, like stocks, yeah, crypto, real estate. And then like, I've come to realize that my wealth of knowledge is so much greater in real estate that,
right,
I'm so much more comfortable with the asset class that like, I'm not a good, I can't trade stocks.
Yeah.
Right.
I can't.
Like I've also realized that.
Yeah. And it's just like, I just don't like, there's too much volatility. I don't know. Like, I mean, I don't know. Amazon's down 15% today. Like, I don't have a great understanding as to why.
Well, I often think of this moment because I kind of want to get back to like how long this trough is, right? Because I feel like one thing that you're constantly reminded of is just how the narratives shift so quickly and how powerful the narratives are. Like I think, you know, back to when I bought ARK, the ETF or whatever it is. I don't even know. I bought that when it was like, oh, Cathie Wood's ARK, you know, it's like at 150 a share or whatever.
She's the new Warren Buffett.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my God. And I talked to 10 guys about that. And it was like, you can't go wrong. You know, the right, new world's here. Like it's a trading at $50 or whatever it is right now. But I just think of that moment. It is very hard to zig while everybody's zagging. Right. And, you know, bringing it back to real estate, mm-hmm, like we're, you know, we're in April. I feel like this shift kind of started in March. We're really early days.
Right.
But back to like how long this lasts, because we're talking about opportunities, but my sense is like I saw, and I've brought this up on the podcast a couple of times, but there's a Globe and Mail article, and I think Rob Carrick's kind of the worst offender, but like, it's like, you know, the question's not like, it's like, was real estate ever a good investment? Does, you know, 20 years from now, are prices the same as February or are they going to be lower? It's like these crazy kind of things that you never would have thought about. So how long is the trough? And I don't need exact, but, and is it like opportunities? Like, are you guys thinking like, hey, if something good comes up next month, like I'm in, or is it like, let's wait to kind of the end of the year and see how it plays out? Not to put you in the hot seat.
Well, you know, for myself, if it's a good opportunity, like I think you should take it. If it's a, you know, a property that you think is great and it's a, you know, it's going to have a good return on investment or you see a long-term potential in it. Yeah. You know, I would say go ahead and purchase it. In terms of like what the market's going to do and kind of the trough of activity, I think, you know, I think a bit of it is perspective, because I actually don't think of it as that slow right now. Like, you know, no. I think I still think that there's still activity, and there's so many, there's a few different factors that I kind of always look at, you know, really low unemployment right now. You know, we have this, you know, still an kind of an undersupply of properties for the market demand that we have in BC and in Vancouver. And we're not like Calgary where we're, you know, we're very landlocked. So it's like, you know, kind of a, it's a constrained supply. So I still think real estate has a great, specifically in BC, has a great opportunity for the long term. And like long term optimistic about where it's going. And, you know, just globally, just what's happening in the whole world with instability in the States and, you know, a lot of other markets. I think Canada is like a really big, you know, it's when you talk to people from Asia, when you talk to people from other parts of the world, like Vancouver is like, they're just so high on it. It's politically stable. It's very safe, great education, great environment. So I feel like there's incredible advantages to the real estate here. So I think long-term is good. So, you know, I advise all my friends to buy, you know, this is like the realtor, but
to buy today,
yeah, at least buy today. Why not three?
Yeah. You can even sell tomorrow.
But yeah, so I'm like long-term optimistic, and you know, as long as you can hold, like go for it.
I'm curious to hear Steve's thoughts, but I just think as I was asking that question, you were responding, I was thinking, you know, I bought, you know, it's like 2007, Michael, when you bought your condo. Like I bought my house in 2017 in the spring. There was a blip in East Van that it seemed like it was going on another run. And of course, you know, I caught that peak and, you know, and then it was like, oh, multiple offers disappeared like the minute after I bought my house. And then 2018, even in condos slowed down kind of halfway through 2018. And then it was like, you know, to the end of 2019, it was pretty slow moving times. But in hindsight, that felt like it went by in a minute. Like, and then we were, even before COVID, it was picking up again. It was like, oh, we're back at it. And then we went on this crazy run. But I think people kind of, the dark days seem to be, and I kind of was trying to get at this before, but like the dark days of the 80s where they're like, yeah, it was 8 years I was underwater. Like, just seems like the cycles move so much quicker now. Mm-hmm. And who knows what it brings. But if it's anything like the last kind of, what turned out to be a fairly mild downturn. I think I was probably down on my house, I don't know, 100K maybe, but I didn't sell it. I just was, hey, I just went home and went to sleep and went back to work. Like it was, you know. But,
well, your pillow was wet.
Yeah, 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 exactly. Yeah. Had nothing to do with sweat. Steve, I want to bring Steve in on here. How? What's the duration? And are we in a time where these recessions just move quickly?
I think the Vancouver market's always fascinated me. It's just like, it's like up 20, down 10, back up 30, down 11. And you're like, it's not like, and then like
the sport, yeah.
Yeah, we talked about like Calgary earlier. It's like flat for five, up two, down one, up three. It's like, yeah, Vancouver is like, and that's why everyone I think in Vancouver is so obsessed with like timing the market. Mm-hmm. I mean, my opinion always like in real estate is like, I just never like, projecting of like the market will, if you buy this, it will go up 10% a year. Yeah. It's just like, I feel like that's always the cherry on top. It's like, if you're buying, just buy a piece of real estate. Like if you get some appreciation top, just know that that's always the bonus. Like if the numbers pencil in, buy it.
Mm-hmm.
But you're asking me about like troughing, like how?
Well, I'm just thinking if it's live and die on interest rates, really, where so? Because the assumption here is interest rates go up, market stays cool, economy gets crippled, interest rates go back down, and everything picks up, right? I'm not an economist, but that's I think the assumption that I'm making here. So what are we thinking? Where before that all kind of
I think course. Yeah, I mean, I just think volume is going to get crunched this year. I just think people are just like, oh, I'm going to wait. Like, and there's a lot of conversations that I'm having, and I just think that so all these like rate hike forecasts are predicated on like these economists that sit in these chairs out in Ottawa that don't know much about real estate markets, and they're like, oh yeah, you know, we're going to get interest rates overnight rate at the Bank of Canada 3%, and like housing's just going to moderate, and like we'll probably still see a little bit of price growth. And it's like, again, we talked about like prices are already correcting in parts of the suburbs, like housing activity is slowing, and it's only been 6 weeks. Like, we only raised rates 75 basis points. Like, inflation's at 6 and the overnight rate's at 1. Like, and people are already like, oh, I'm not too sure about real estate right now. It's like, guys, we've hardly even moved the needle here. So I just think that the Bank of Canada will probably keep raising rates. I think that they're so optimistic. Like they got inflation wrong. They got housing being transitory wrong. I think they're going to get wrong on the economy's ability to withstand higher rates. So I don't know. My opinion is like housing activity will slow. We'll probably go into recession next year. And then it's going to be like, okay, oops, we're cutting rates. It was fun while it lasted. Let's cut rates. And that's probably when we restart the housing rebound.
Well, maybe we'll leave it there. But guys, we got this segment called the Five Wire. Five quick questions about lighthearted questions to end the show. Can you guys stick around for that?
Sure.
The Five Wire is brought to you by Scalina Real Estate. Hey, that sounds familiar. Scalina Real Estate is a full-service real estate company serving Vancouver, offering comprehensive, tried and tested buyer and seller systems. With over a decade in the top 10% of realtors in the Lower Mainland and a perfect 5-star Google review, Scalina Real Estate can help with all your real estate needs. We also have an extensive network of the best industry professionals and trades right across the country. There's no reason to not get in touch. Head over to scalinarealestate.com to find out more. Okay, so question number one for Michael. What have you been binge watching lately, or a movie recommendation? I know you're a big superhero.
Oh, yeah, right. You are a big
binge watching. I've just been watching kids' stuff. So, for the baby.
Oh, yeah. Congratulations.
I'm a new dad. So,
you're big on Paw Patrol.
Stuff. Yeah. Paw Patrol, all that stuff. Yeah.
Nice. Have you watched Encanto yet?
No, not yet.
Okay.
No.
Stay away from that soundtrack.
Steve. Binge watching or movie?
Don't say The Big Short, Steve.
For the 18th time. Man, not in the whole like NHL playoffs are coming up.
Right.
So I've been watching a lot of the regular season, but that counts. I'll throw maybe Yellowstone in there. That's just finished the most recent one there. So
most recent season?
Yeah.
Real piece of trash that last season.
It was too slow.
Oh, my God. Just watching horses dance for like the whole season.
Michael, one song that's been on repeat lately.
Oh, geez. I'm a podcast guy. So the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast and the Looney Hour.
Good plug.
Oh, there you go.
Amazing.
Steve, best song or song on repeat.
Yeah. Or your karaoke go-to.
Yeah, I don't have a song either. Can I say podcast? Song. See, I don't even listen to music.
You know what? It's crazy, but the one thing that's been overwhelming on this podcast is everybody in the real estate industry listens to hip hop.
I'm more of a country.
I was going to say Yellowstone. Garth Brooks.
Yeah. Calgary. Someone goes
to the internet. Did someone say Garth Brooks?
Yeah, I did. Okay.
More of a Chris Gaines guy myself. Okay, Michael. Question number three. What is one book you'd recommend our listeners pick up?
And you're a voracious reader, so this should be good.
Yeah. So recent one that I just read is Atomic Habits by James Clear.
I love that book. Yeah. Great one.
That was one of your favorites.
That was one of my favorites.
Great.
Read it 3 or 4 times now. It's a good one.
Steve, one book you'd recommend.
I mean, I still like Rich Dad, Poor Dad. That's like foundational. Yeah. I mean, everyone's probably said that on this podcast. So I'll throw another one in there. if you're trying to understand like housing and debt and that sort of interest rate picture, let's throw in a book called House of Debt. I think it's by Atif Mian. Anyways, it's basically chronicles the 2008 housing bust and the role of private debt. And that's why I talked about earlier, just like my view on interest rates and how high they can go.
House of Debt. That's a good one.
You know, one thing that I should have asked earlier in the Tell Us About Your stage of the show, but Michael, you've told your kind of story to real estate on this program before. You were an aspiring lawyer, I believe.
Well, yeah, it was going to be.
Right.
Yeah, that's right.
It was the law firm that crushed you.
That's right. Those red cubes. They just haunt me.
So, Steve, the question I have just, and this is totally hijacking the five wire, we've heard about your hockey pursuits. Did you actually go to school? Because you're fairly versed in the world of finance, it seems. So is that where you came of? And actually, we should have, how'd you get to real estate is kind of the...
Well, that's a good question. Maybe I'll save question one now.
Maybe I'll save that for the bar down the street, I guess. But yeah. Anyway, I'm curious on that.
Do you want me to add in right
now? Yeah, let's add in. Well, we'll add it. We'll just keep it in just naturally.
So here's a plug for you. Selkirk College, Harvard of the Kootenays in Castlegar, BC. Had a hockey scholarship there. It was smaller than my high school, 800 people. I took business and... you're a business and did not well. So I'm mostly self-taught. I'd literally just pay for a lot of subscriptions and just deep dive. I don't know what they call it.
Autodidact.
Yeah. Are you consuming like a media public, like The Economist? What are you reading? What are some of your favorite reads?
First subscription I ever got, which was basically paid for itself for sure, was like 2015, like Real Vision TV. Basically are like a media platform, all just interviewing the top hedge fund managers, et cetera, from all over the world. So Real Vision, I'll subscribe to a whole bunch of people that do independent newsletters that are like hedge fund macro guys. So that's kind of where I put a ton of money into resources because I love it. And I think it pays dividends personally.
I thought the takeaway was going to be that Castlegar has a really great school for economics.
Oh God, no. For actually, they do have a very they have a renowned program for pilots. So if you're looking to be a pilot, that's where you want to go. If you're looking to have fun and learn about stuff, don't go there.
Other stuff.
All right. So in one book, Steve, or one newsletter that you really like. How about we don't have to do a book.
All right. Newsletter. I really like, anyone can go subscribe to it. Luke Roman. His name is Luke Roman. He's, I don't know, what is it? $100 a month. And he just writes about big picture macroeconomics.
That's a great one. Awesome. And next question, question number four, Michael, what's one habit, practice, or belief that you've taken on lately that's had a positive impact on you?
I think we spoiled that one. But the intermittent fasting thing has been really good. Yeah. So it's good. It's actually good for the brain, too. It's not even just good for the
Do you feel good belly. When you're fasted?
I feel very energetic. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel good. And I feel like, you know, things come to me a lot quicker.
I don't think we're supposed to be digesting all the time.
No.
I don't think so.
No.
One habit, Steve, are you intermittent fasting?
I am not. I don't know about lately, but just getting up regularly in the morning, going to the gym, getting a sweat. Like, I think just starting your day with like a good sweat, a good workout, I feel like it kind of wakes you up, gets the blood flowing, and then on with the day. So
we've started doing that at lunch, which has been...
Which is F45, like across the street. So it's 45 minutes in and out. It's pretty good.
I was actually going to sign up for them.
Oh, you should sign up for the Cambie one.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll talk. We'll talk.
Is there a promo code for the podcast? Yeah, exactly.
All right. Last question for you, Michael. Something under $1,500. And I know you're not a materialistic guy. No. Something under $1,500 you have bought that has transformed your life.
Gucci handbag.
Yeah. Do you want to take this one first?
Gucci handbag.
You want to take this one first, Steve?
I'm waiting for you.
Okay. AirPods, actually. Yeah, I've
that
noticed.
That comes
like,
up
yeah,
all the time.
AirPods yeah. have been like, yeah, really, it feels like, it took me forever because I used to call them like, you know, like just leave me alone things. Yeah. Like, you know, like it doesn't invite people to come, but actually, yeah, I love the AirPods.
The best is like cleaning around the house and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. You know, yeah. I feel like fantastic. I have some undiscovered time with it because totally. Yeah, I get to learn. Yeah.
That's actually a great way of putting it. Undiscovered
yeah.
time.
Yeah.
Steve, come up with something better than that.
Than undiscovered yeah, exactly. time. Yeah,
my, yeah, yeah. I was like, took my hijack, AirPod. Yeah. You took my AirPods. Yeah. I'm just going to say like, yeah, resources. So I mean, I'll say my Real Vision subscription.
Right.
I think it's it's less than $1,500, and it's the smartest people in finance. And just being able to just like sit and watch and learn from like the best in the world, and that's the amazing thing. Like even on this podcast, right? Like to have conversations that are, I mean, at the end of the day, like you know, top producing people that have actually executed in the real estate space, to be able to learn from them. This wasn't available, I feel like, 10, 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who can't see this, Steve pointed at Adam and then he pointed at Michael.
And,
then,
yeah. I was on the way to Michael from where Steve is sitting in the room.
I was like, wow. Look up to Michael's hand was moving around.
Yeah. But last but not least, we got to talk about where we can find out more information about you guys. So we'll start with Michael. Where can people learn about you?
Okay. Well, we have our podcast as well. It's the Oakland Podcast. So feel free to listen in if you want more information.
Yeah, good plug.
Yeah.
And thank you for being the sponsor of our show, for allowing us to do this day
keep
and day
the lights
out.
On. Yeah, it's
right.
Nice.
Yeah, that's right. These mics are really nice. the Oakland Podcast, you can watch us on any way that you can find this podcast. You can find the Oakland Podcast or, you know, go to at Oakland at the Instagram and you can shoot a DM and or info@oakland.com.
Fantastic.
I'll plug the Looney Hour. I'm one of the co-hosts podcasts, basically Canadian macro finance. We talk a little bit about housing as well. And Twitter, if you want to troll me.
I was going to say, so one thing.
You get trolled more now, don't
you? Yeah, I do.
I'm surprised they haven't censored you yet.
I know. Elon's coming for me. Yeah. I was, as everyone well knows, I was quite bearish on like housing, Canadian housing. I was fairly bearish. I went mega bull. I was probably like the biggest bull in the room from the start of the pandemic through this recent run-up. And so everyone now is like, oh, this guy's a shill. Like, look at him. Builds the name for himself. Now he's just a market pumper. And now I'm actually getting bearish again, but people forget that. So I get trolled on.
Well, you do. And one thing, you know, as a lurker, never a poster, I noticed like you'll post something, you'll get... I don't know how you sleep at night, to be honest. Because, like, you'll get, like, you're a genius, sir. And then you're like, thank you very much. And then somebody's like, you're the biggest shill on the planet. I hate your guts. And then no response. Oh, yeah. But your phone just must be
just
going
respond
like,
to Matt.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, what do I got to do? No, but your phone must just be... Like,
I
how
do
much
my Twitter,
dopamine
you must mute it. You,
the like, Twitter notifications are completely muted. So I'll just go in. Like, when I open up the app, I can see them all. But there's people there. Like, I will... entertain and like fight back on the odd person and be like,
great,
elaborate further, please. yeah, a lot of the ones is like, you're shilling Calgary. It's like, I'm not even licensed in Calgary. I can't make any money over there, man. Like,
right.
I got a couple of properties that I have no intention of selling for the next 40 years, but yes.
Fantastic. Well, maybe we'll leave it there. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
Coming in on a Friday afternoon. So thanks again for your time and appreciate it.
Great. Thanks, guys.
So there you have it, folks, our discussion with Steve Saretsky and Michael Yu. Great conversation with those two.
That was ramping up to be a bit of a night. And then I got a call.
It
ruined my entire day. I got a call about a leak which is not managed by a property manager, which lesson learned.
I was going to say, there's so many takeaways there, but the big takeaway from the day was, why are you managing...
So this I started managing it a number of years ago and it's just never, we've had two tenants. It hasn't ever really been a problem. Of course, we go sit down at a restaurant, first round of beers ordered and food ordered, and I get a call, you've got a leak in your condo.
Which is, I feel like, is the worst type of call, right? It's like, it's one thing if it's like, hey,
you know, I'm having trouble with a light switch or something. It's like, all right, sure, that's tomorrow.
I'll send someone. Yeah. Or it'll happen tomorrow. But yeah, this needed to be addressed urgently. So I left you three. Of course, I'm the glue of the relationship.
The whole thing disintegrated. The whole thing
just disintegrated.
Yeah.
House cards. Anyways. And yeah, sounds like you guys wrapped everything up once I left.
You know what? We had one more drink. The thing about a guy like Steve, especially, was I think he had to go do a YouTube video or something. So he was thinking it was like, you know, it wasn't supposed to be a 12-hour Friday night. But anyway, so the whole thing didn't really, you know, it was good. It was a couple hours on a patio. I'm not complaining. But more importantly,
yes,
how's your flooring?
Oh, yeah. That everything's good. Everything's good. To be honest, it was a pinhole leak in the plumbing of the building. And it was more of like a trickle. It turned out there was some damage to some drywall, but nothing that I'm not even actually going to go through and insure. So it's going to get done.
Okay. Well, thankful for that. But before we go, Adam, of course, we have VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is our website where all things real estate related live. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com for the commercial real estate podcast. We have the Live Wire. This is our weekly mailer, deal of the month, stats before anyone else, different types of stats, VIP pre-sales for residential, VIP pre-sales for commercial. There's no reason why you don't want to be on this list. We also have, and in a market like this, PCS is good in any market, but I think specifically days on market, seeing what's selling in a market like this, we have private client services.
If you are thinking about setting up an account, right now is the time, because you're right. Now you're going to start to see where the opportunities are over the next calendar year, 6 months. What a great way to do it. So if you are not using PCS, you are standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor level information for free. It's available at your fingertips. It's at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Someone will get in touch and set you up with the perfect account, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's for sure. Her name's Melissa.
Yes. Yeah, it'll be one of us or Melissa. She'll set you up. And man, we have a lot of people on this program. And we know how to tailor it to make sure you get the right results for sure.
Absolutely. If you want to talk about that or anything else, give me a shout, 778-847-2854 or matt@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or adam@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
We also got that Kokomo line, info@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Well, have a great week, guys. And we are back next week with another exciting episode. Take care.
2,000 Spaces for Radio. Subscribe today.